Moadim leSimcha, Chagim uzmanim leSason. Today's daf in Masechet Menachot brought you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh is daf Pevav, and we're holding at the Halakha Mishnah. Tekoa Alpha Lashemet. So what did we discuss until now? We discussed what the Inyanim are in terms of the Dinim of Solet, and where it is we would best go in order to get the best quality Solet from Menachot. Now, let's talk about the Dinim of Shemen. Of course, Shemen is Nogea not only Menachot, but Shemen is also Nogea the Menorah. So we're going to have to also examine the differences, which we'll do today, between the Chiyuve Shemen and the Zachut of the Shemen for the Menorah versus the Shemen for the Menachot. So first of all, the place to go was to go to Tekoa. Tekoa had very, very high quality shemen. And therefore, if you wanted to get the best that you could possibly get for your mincha, the place to go was to Tekoa. Abba Shaul Omer, well, if you couldn't get to Tekoa, the second best would be Regev. Regev was in Eiver HaYardin. The truth is that Kol HaAretzot HaYukshirot, as we saw, there's no din specifically in where it needs to be brought from. We saw that yesterday. But this is the most high quality, and because of that, Mikan, Ayu Mevi'in. In Mevi'in, now, even though we said all is kosher, but it also depends not only on the location, but it depends on the quality of the land. And therefore, Ein Mevi'in Lo Mibeit HaZivalim. If a field needs to be fertilized in order for it to be able to grow things, then the likelihood is we're not going to get it exactly right. Naturally, a fully nutritional field is much more likely to have a high quality growth than something where we're doing fertilization artificially. So we don't want it to go from there. And the same thing is true of a Beit HaShelachin, where over there we have to bring the proper amount of oil, of water directly to an irrigated field. And the chances of getting it exactly right, the way that it would be if it was a naturally watered field, are slim. And therefore, what grows there is never going to be of the highest quality. And we don't want to take trees, olives from trees, where there were things planted between the trees, because those plants actually deplete the nutrition in the ground. And because of that, the trees and their olives are not going to be fully grown the way they ought to be. The imevi, now bide avad, if he did, then kasher. Imevin amfikaton, you don't bring amfikaton, which is a type of oil, l'chora. Now the most understand this to be amfikanon, which is defined later on the Gemara. The imevi, but bide avad, it would be kasher. So in other words, it's clear according to this that this is, assuming this is the Anpikanon that we're going to discuss later, it's definitely a type of oil. It's just not the highest quality. Because of that, you may be kasher. Ein mevi'in min hagargarin shenishu b'mayim. You cannot bring oil from olives that have been soaked in water in order to be able to loosen them to give oil. So these are low quality olives. They fall from the tree early. The only way you can get them to release any kind of oil is to let them soak. But that's not high quality oil because it's basically watered down. We don't bring pickled olives and we don't bring shnukin, olives that we had to boil, and that allowed it to release the oil. So none of that is kosher for us to bring from. The question is, what if you did? In this case, it would be actually possible because they're of such low quality that they're not considered to be the natural oil that's necessary to bring for the Menachos. Now, we know that Tekoa, of course, we know, is a Mokom that we have heard about in Tanakh, because the story in Shmuel, in which David HaMelech was not talking to Avshalom, and he didn't want to allow Avshalom in, and Yoav felt very bad about this, and he wanted to get David HaMelech to make up with his family. So he sent to this wise woman from Tekoa. The question is, why in the world did he send specifically to someone in Tekoa? Vayishlach Yoav Tekoa, vayikach misham isha chachama. So why would he go there? Vayishna Tekoa. The point is, because, I mean, basically, when it says Tekoa, The mashmaut is that he went to the town of Tekoa to look for an Ishar Chachamah. It doesn't say that he sent for an Ishar Chachamah in Tekoa. It says first he sent to Tekoa. All right. So then he's looking in Tekoa to find the correct woman. Like, what made him think that that's where to go? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, itok shegimim b'shem et zayit, chuchma mitzuya ben. So, because there's a sigula of shemen, which is keneged or, and or, of course, is the way in which we represent consciousness. So then it means that in a place like this, which is the reason that we see a rotzet lahachkim yadrim, because the menorah was bedorim. So the menorah is always a simon lachochma. Remember, the shiva kneya menorah are keneged the sheva hachochmot. And because of that, he figured that's the place to go for chochma. You want to talk about the extent in which the bracha of Asher, which is all about oil, is beautiful and real in terms of the commercial level of the production of shemen. The beautiful, this is one of the most gorgeous stories. I know you know it already, but it's just as exciting every time. So Tana Rabban says, V'tovo b'shemen raglo, that Asher, the bracha of Asher, is that they're going to be able to dip their feet in oil. Now, well, what exactly is that a reference to? So Zechel Koshel Asher Shemoshech Shemen Kima'ayan. Water, if you think water is something when it flows in a spring, you should see an Asher. That ain't water. That's pure olive oil. That's how much olive oil they had. And they say a story once that the people in Lutkia needed a lot of oil, having just been bombed out by Trump, and they needed to import millions of barrels of oil. Now, where are we going to get millions of barrels of oil? So they found some guy who was a tremendously powerful agent. He knew every single contact in the world to get oil. And so, minulehem pumustu secha, they got themselves this international agent. They told him, look, you got to get us a shemen b'meya ribo. We want 1 million manas worth of oil. Whoa, that's a lot of olive oil. So he goes to Yerushalayim, thinking that he'll find at least there some contacts. Homer Lo, so they say, well, you know, the commercial center nowadays is in Tzur. Go to Tzur. So he goes to Tzur. Homer Lo, they said in Tzur, they said the only place you're going to get that amount of oil is you got to go to Gush Chalav. So Gush Chalav is in Asher. And so they told him, look, around there, you'll find a place near Gush Chalav, which is going to be full of oil. Maybe Gavi could even go there and today and take us around. So he goes to Gush Chalav, and they say to him, the only guy around here that's got that kind of oil that's readily available is Mr. So-and-so in the field in such and such a place. They give him directions. They say, go there. Anyway, he goes there and he sees this, I don't know, this old guy, some farmer, who's sitting there and he's hoeing underneath his olive trees. And the guy looks like a real schlub. He's just a single guy working out in the field. So he goes over to him and he says, I know this is probably crazy, but do you have like a million barrels of oil for me? Yes. You don't see I'm busy, man. I'm busy right now. Just wait till I finish my work and I'll take care of you. Well, I'm Tammy. Hachasayim alachti. The guy's thinking to himself, all right, if they say so, this can't be real. Anyway, so he waits until this guy finishes hoeing under his trees, you know, and Leacher says, see him, Lachto. So he finishes his work and he takes his tools and he ties them up, puts them over his back, and then he's walking home. And as he's walking home, if there's any stones in the road, he bends down, picks up the stones, clears the road. I mean, this guy is a worker. This is no millionaire. This is like a really down to earth, salt of the earth kind of man. And the guy's thinking to himself, excuse me, but do you really have 1 million barrels of oil to sell me? And the guy says to him, you know, this can't be true. He says to himself, they probably did one of those paro in pajamas tricks on me, you know, go to so-and-so. This guy's got 1 million barrels of oil like I got. Oh, this is insane. They just wanted to make a fool out of me. Anyway, when he comes, this guy comes into town, so he comes to town and his shivcha brings him out a kettle of chamin, hot water. First, he washes his hands, he washes his feet, and then she brings out a solid gold bowl filled with oil. So it's yellow sefer shel zahav melei hashemen, and he puts his hands and his feet. This is like the most expensive oil. This guy's putting his feet into this oil. That's a golden bowl full of oil. And that's the Kayim Mashinemar, the Tovel Bashemen Raglo. They had so much oil that they could use it to wash their feet in. Anyway, so he has the guy sit down, have a cup of coffee, a little bit to eat. After they eat and they drink, he goes out to the garage. And he starts emptying, you know, into barrels. He loads up a million barrels worth of Meyaribu of Shemen. And he says to the guy, do you need any more? So the guy says, well, the truth is, they would take whatever, I mean, they didn't give me any more because they never thought that they could possibly, I would succeed in finding so much oil, but they definitely needed more. The problem is they didn't give me any more cash, so I wouldn't be able to pay for it. So yes, but Amy Damim. So he says, it's not a problem. If you need more, I'll give you as much as you need, and then I'll just come along with you and collect the cash on delivery. What's the big deal? So it's no problem. Okay. So the guy says, all right, if you're ready to. So he gives him another 180,000 miles worth of oil, and they couldn't find any more transport. So they say that that guy, not the farmer, the agent, had actually had to hire every single truck and every delivery system in the entire country, because there was no way for him to get all of this oil to Lutkia. And there was not a single susa, parent, and gamal and chamor in the entire Eretz Yisrael that this guy hadn't hired to carry that shemen back to Lutkia. Anyway, when he gets there, this is like the people are going out of their minds. They see like miles and miles of delivery trucks that are coming filled with all the oil they could ever dream of. And they all come out and they say, wow, you're a genius. How did you do that? Oh, Marlam Loli Kalsuni, man, it's got nothing to do with me. You see this little farmer? He's the guy. If a guy can give me a million barrels of oil, believe me. Not only that, now we owe him for another 180,000. And all of this is the Kayemash and Emar, you know. There's people out there, they're all over the West. Mitasher. Mitasher means the guy's making himself look rich. Right? So these guys, they're going around, they're driving their Mercedes, they're roaming around in these $20,000 suits, $1,000 shirts. They don't have a nickel to their name. These guys are living off of their credit cards, and they're Mitasher ve'ein kol. The guy's got not a penny in the bank, you understand? And then you've got a guy like this farmer over here, he's mitroshed. He acts like he's got nothing. Va'on Rav, the guy's a multi-billionaire. Amazing. Okay, anyway, so getting back to, yes, Mr. Gavi, are you going to take us? Your hand is raised.
I can say that a couple years ago, not too far one over Barnea, but I was in Alma, which is like very close to Gush Chalav, and I was in a conditorium there, and the woman in the control says, you know, my brother, he was at the back with the cows and treating the cows. He says, he makes award-winning olive oil. Wow. That comes right from here, and you don't understand how good it is, and it's won prizes around the world.
That's yeah. Amazing. Your mom is amazing.
The olive oil from Regev is Ajloun in Jordan. It's the best olive oil in Jordan. It's sold in the supermarkets in the different cans. I was there where they were pressing the olives and people were coming with their own.
You opened up the door.
I brought back 10 liters of it. It's this light, sweet thing, delicious. I've never since had anything like it.
Amazing. Okay. Baruch Hashem. Zechinu, lirot et ha-mishneh mitkayemet. Okay, moving on now. Next thing that we learn is that you shouldn't bring oil that grew on trees that were growing in a fertilized area. And the last thing that it said is you don't use anpikano. And if you did, so then we have, actually, there's two gersaot, whether it's kosher, whether it's pasul, and as we said, the correct gersa seems to be not on paktan, but rather on pikanon. And then there are two completely different girsaot. According to Rashi Niksav, yeah, the correct girsa here is posel, and not that like we have it, that it's kosher. And the truth is that in many Mishnayos, it has that girsa. So, Vatanya. All right. So let's see whether the Mishnah actually works out according to this Mishnah, the Braita. Because in the Braita it says, Ein mevi'in ampitnun, ve'im hevi'i pasul, v'pnei shuhu siraf. Now here's the problem. The problem is not, of course, obviously, according to those girsaot that actually have the girsa of pasul, so the problem isn't that it says that it's pasul. It says because it's siraf. Now, siraf means that it's not actually shemen, but that it's what we call mohal, right? So remember, before you actually get oil, you get like this thin kind of bitter moisture, which is called the mohal, which we've spoken about many times in terms of the dinam of heksher, whether it has a din of oil or not. So here, the Braita is saying it's bichlal not even considered to be shemen, in which case the Mishnah doesn't really make sense, because if this thing is not even oil, so then our Mishnah, so if you learn kosher in the Mishnah, so obviously this is a contradiction, but even if you learn it's posel, it's listed in the groups of oil that are posel. But here the Mishnah is saying it really isn't even oil at all. Omer Rav Yosef, Enochinami. You're right. There are two different shitot in Lokashim. The Braita is following Rav Chiya Shita, and the Mishnah is going according to Rabbi Shimon Bar Rebbe. Rabbi Chiya used to actually throw out Tanpikanon, and he didn't think this is bichlal called oil. He wouldn't even use it. Whereas Rabbi Shimon Bar Rebbe, he would actually be tovel his yirakot in it. And you know what? This is a continuation even of the sugya that we had about the koah, because this is also Nogea Ashirim. Ashirim, your symmetry, remember, who was the one that would use it was Rabbi Shimon Bar Rebbe. Rabbi Shimon Bar Rebbe was a millionaire, right? I mean, this is like the richest family in all Klal Yisrael. He's not going to throw out his apikanon. Oh, no, he's going to use it for salad dressing. Mashem came, poor Rabbi Chiya, he dumps it. It's not good enough for me to eat. That's the way to remember. Ashirim are mekamtzim, the ones that are always little bit overly careful with their money, you know, those are the Ashirim. Then, you want to take a look at the Anpikanon. If you recall, we had this sugya in Megillah. So when it says in the Pasuk, Shishah Chodashim B'Shemen Hamor, this is what they did for all of the Betulot. And what exactly is Shemen Hamor? So Ravuna Bar Chiya Omar, this is Sitafta. It's a Sitachta, rather. It's a type of oil. According to Rashi, it's actually more, which is balsam. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Bar Abba Amar, no, this is actually a shemen zayit, but it's a special shemen zayit that has not grown to even one third of its full growth, and it has special use, which we'll see in a moment. And Tanya, we see Gufa in the Braita that Rabbi Yehuda Omer on Pikanon. Again, assuming that this is the same substance that the Mishnah is talking about, which depends on the girsa that we have there, on pikanon is shemen zayit shelo hevi shlish. And why would you use that? Isn't it better to have full and delicious, mature shemen? No, this isn't used for that. This is used as a depilatory. Meishirat haseyar, it's used to take off any kind of hair on the skin, and it also softens the skin. It's not used as a regular oil. It has a specifically penetrative power, and it's a treatment for the skin. Anyway, the Mishnah continued on to say that so if you've got the type of olives that needed to be soaked in oil, and or obviously if they were pickled, or if they were shluki, and if they were boiled, so Tanur Rabbanan, shemen zayit, kavush, shaluk, or sharui, or shemen zayit that was made from shimarim, which was already after, this is like the some of the wines that they used to make around here, after you squeeze everything out of it, you know, so then you try to get some additional alcohol out of it. And here they did the same thing with shmarim. After everything was removed from it, there's always sediment. And so they squeeze the sediment again, let it sit around. Or if it has a bad smell to it, shoreach ra, there you're not allowed to bring it to a mincha. And if you do bring it, it's pasul. So here we have the last, remember yesterday, even though Rabbeinu was trying to push us into discussing this yesterday, the truth is that we have an additional case, but this case is not asked by Rava. This one is asked by Rava. What we had three cases yesterday about being, somebody is actually Magdish to be Beis HaMikdash. If you're Magdish, a behema, it has a Baal, it's a Baal HaTemum, then you would be Chayiv Malkus for, because of the Lo Yavi. Lo Yavi, the Gemara Darshins means not even to bring it to Hegdash. So the question that we had yesterday was on a number of different situations where you brought something that was possible, and the question was, would you be over on this with the Isser of Lo Yavi on a Baal Mum? Now, yesterday we had three questions like that that were asked by Rava, and of course, Rav Barnea wanted to jump the gun, but there's an additional question today by Rava. And again, the question is, like, why are these repeated four different times? And each time we end up with a teku, as we do over here. What would be the din, boy, Rabba? And what if you did? Yigdisha, so suppose you used a kind of oil that was puzzle for a mincha. Maushi yilkealav mishum ba'almu. Would you be chayav malchus? Because it would be the same thing as lo yavi. Do we say, kivan de pasul kiva almun dami, o dilma in ba almun, ela bivema? So for the fourth time, we've gotten to take. And the question is, why would the Gemara go through four different shilas that essentially were all the same issue? They don't seem to be any different. So as I mentioned to you yesterday, there is an approach by the Radvaz, and he is actually, he puts them in a different order and says that this isn't the order in which they were asked, but that the correct order was that we first wanted to know what the din would be with the wood. And Rava originally thought that the wood, even though Aliba the Rebbe, you can bring a carbon that's wood, but since it's be'etzem, not a normal kind of carbon, because the entire thing is burned in the same way that fuel is burned on the Mizbeah. So he thought that perhaps the inyan of the teku over there is because wood is not really similar to other carbonates, even if you hold it has a din of a mincha. Maybe that's why there was a suffix. So because of that, he asked the question, we're going to have this question, a little bit later, what the din was legabe yayin, and then asked the question that we have now. Those two were asked together, which in terms of the same level, one by Rav and one by Rabba. And there, he felt that over there, since if you're pouring it out on the Mizbeach, so then it's actually whole. But maybe the teku is because of the fact that it isn't burned on the Mizbeach, right? So it's poured out on the Mizbeach, or something is poured out on the Mizbeach, so then it's not really the same as a real carbon. So maybe that was the teku. So then at the end, the last shaila was, the question that we had asked earlier, was Nogea, the shaila about the chitim that had worms in them, or the seles that was wormy. And because of that, that was very similar already to a real carbon. He thought maybe that case would be actually chayev, and the Gemara would be able, someone would be able to prove to him. Kamashmon, even that case was a teku. So we're still actually a little bit in the middle of this sugya, but the next case is not fundamentally different, according to Ritvaz, from the case of Shemen. So we talked about it now. And this brings us to a very important moment in history, in which we have a new Mishnah being introduced by a fully renewed Kapitan, who during these days of Geula and during these days of Moed, in which the earth is Mishadesh, and we see every day Nisim Chadashim, and are about to see Nisim similar to Kriyas Yamsuf, Bezrat Hashem, in which we can see the drowning of our enemies. And we now ask the brand new Sir Richard, for the first time in history, would have to bring a Minchas Chinuch.
And maybe a new recording.
What?
And maybe a new recording and append this to the previous stuff. This is a lot.
No, no, this is all we started. We started Pei Vav today.
With a lot of Pei Hei.
Well, it is. Stop arguing so much. Let's move on. Go ahead.
Zuk the Halak Mishnah.
Not a bad new beginning, Sir Richard. Shlosha Zeitimi. There are three levels of Zayit. Now, what exactly this means is Rashi holds that it's referring to three different periods that you actually harvest the Zeitim. The Rambam learns this has nothing to do with different harvests. It has to do with different ways in which you handle your Zeitim. So the first is straight out, the Zeitim that you take directly from the field. And then you've got a second level in which you take all of the Zeitim at one time. The first level is you go up out in the field and you do a selection. And you take off of the tree, you'd go in order of the most chashuva ones, as we'll see. Your gargaro, as Rashi brings in Chumash, gargaro barosh hazayit. The second group he holds is referring to zeitim. His loshon is zeitim shemaskan kulan beirvuvia ve'alan lagag. So you take all, which is the way, by the way, that the zeitim are collected today. They use these enormous shakers, very, very strong shakers that shake the tree very strongly, mechanically. And the Zeitim actually all fall off onto a large plastic, piece of plastic that then all of the Zeitim. So that means that the modern approach is, according to the Rambam, by definition, post the first level of quality oil, and you're never going to get the same quality oil if you bring them all together at once. Your muskum kulam biruvuvia, and then your mevarer afterwards. You don't get the same choice. And then, again, the third level, according to the Rambam, is not a third harvest, but the way he puts it is that you collect these and you have to leave them to sit around until they are sufficiently heated through over-ripening, and only then do they properly release their oil. Now, each one of these three stages, whether it's Rashi's three stages of three different stages of harvesting, or the Rambam's three stages, meaning not stages, I shouldn't say stages, but three sets of olives of differing levels of quality, each one of those sets has three stages in it. So we have shlosha zeitim, uvayem shlosha shlosha shmanim. Each one of these groupings, whether they're different harvests or whether they're different levels of collecting the same harvest, each one has three different grades of olive oil. So here's how we start. Hazayit harishon. So the first level is megargaro barosh hazayit. What you do over there is you actually do a selection at the very top by gargir. You actually, megargir, you take out specific olives from off of the only the top of the tree, which has been exposed to the sun the whole time. Those are the finest that you're going to get. And then, kotesh minotein tochasal, you then have to crush it. And you don't crush it inside of the bod, but you crush it right up there and you put it into a basket to allow the oil without any pressure, no pressure on the oil. You let it, and you need to crush it because otherwise the oil can't get out of the olive. But you crush it and then you just let it sit in the basket and the oil drips out. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that's no good. If you put it directly in the basket, on the bottom of the basket, so then what happens is that ultimately the bottom of the basket ends up getting filled with little pieces of fruit that are mixed in with the oil. It becomes a mess. That is not the finest olive oil. What you do is you take the oil the olives that you've crushed, and you don't put them on the bottom. You put them around the edges of the sal. And that way they have to seep through the entire walls of the sal, so that by the time they drip out, they are really clean. So he says, only sivivota sal. Somebody's talking here. Only sivivota sal. You only put them around the edges. You don't put them directly into the sal. And this is Reb Yehuda's shita throughout in the processing of any level of these first, second, or third, as we'll see. Anyway, that would be the highest level of the highest grouping. So that would be Rishon.
Rebbe, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Is this sal, is this the alkalim that they use in the Beit HaBad?
No.
Okay.
This is the highest level oil that you're going to get. Now then, you go ahead and to'in bakura. Whatever is left then in the olives are then put into the bad, and you put the korah on them, which is very, very heavy, and that pushes out more oil. And here too, Rabbi Yehuda holds every second stage does not use a korah. The weight of the korah is immense, and therefore it's going to squeeze out too much to have level two, your second grade. And according to him, says Rabbi Yehuda, and he says this every time, you only use avanim. So you select stones that are not overly heavy. You put them on the specific area where you want things to come out, but you don't stick everything under this 500-pound korah. So use separate avanim. And that oil is second-grade oil, zesheni. Then you grind it. And whatever is left is ground up in order to get the oil to come out more. And then you put them in the actual bod with the korah. And then you're to'ein. To'ein means you put them under the korah. This is now level three. So this is 3A. Okay, so now which one of these is used for what? The first level is kosher for the menorah. Because remember, we have shemen, zayit, zach, katit. So we've got those three words that are used, lama'or, specifically for the light. So that means that the very first that has absolutely nothing that was taken out under pressure, it came out entirely on its own after it was broken open, that is kosher for the menorah. The other levels are kosher for the menachos. Now let's talk about the second grouping, which according to Rashi means a second harvest, which is going to be lower level olives. And according to the Rambam is talking about where you shook off the olives that were remaining on the tree, brought them all up together, and then you did a selection from them. So the sheni, your megargaro, you do the selection on your rooftop, but you've already collected all those olives that were left. And then it's the same thing. Your kotesh, not underneath, you don't grind it, you just put them in a mortar, squish them, and again you put them into the sal. And once again, Reb Yehuda says, no, you never put into the sal to get a higher level of oil. You put them around the edges of the sal, sivivota sal. And that is the first level, zerishon. Then the next level is you put them in the Beit HaBad under the korah. No, says Rabbi Yehuda. You never get a second level under that heavy korah. You select avanim. So avanim. Okay. Zesheni. Then again, you grind it. And afterwards, you put them indeed under the heavy korah. That gives you your shlishi. Now, interestingly enough, because of the way that we understand the pasuk, only the first one, even though it's level four in total, but it's processed the same way that allows the olives not to have crushed fruit in it. And therefore, it's kosher for the menorah because it is katit lama'or. But it's not, even though the level two of the first one, 2A, is obviously higher quality. That is not kosher for menorah because it's the mode of how we get the oil that allows it to be kosher for the oil and not for the menorah and not the overall quality of the oil, which is a different issue. And therefore, We've got only the first one being kosher for the menorah, and all of the others are for menachos. Now, how is number three, again, the set number three, according to the Rambam, is set number three that needed to be allowed to soften before you were able to process it at all? So you just put them into the Beit Abba, didn't do anything with them, let them sit around until they warmed. And of course, they warmed through oxidation. And then, or according to Rashi, the shlishi is the third group of olives that grow. So shlishi, there we have the ma'atin that Dovidal was talking about before. And that's where actually they get warmed and heated. So the third one is otno. You put them into that tight container, and then you wait until it gets heated and nooned. So now it's softened, and that's going to allow all the oil to come out. Then ma'alehu uminagvo barosh hagag, you've got to get them dried. Why? Because it's become filled with mochal. It's very sharp and not tasty at all. That has been coming out, seeping out for the past few days, where you've been leaving it up there for it to be lakui. And it is indeed lakui. You don't want that chomer lakui to get into your oil. So you have to bring it up to the roof, let it dry out. Then you go ahead and you do what you do with the other two. So you do the first at Ketisha, which means you haven't crushed them in, you haven't ground them in any way. All you did was you put them in a mortar. Gotesh is just a very hand job to this mortar, not anything that was mechanical. And you're noten l'toch hasal. And again, Reb Yehuda says, no, never put it into a sal. You're going to get a mush at the bottom of the sal. Put them sivivot hasal. Okay, so anyway, that would be the level that is 3A. And then you do the same thing, but you put the Korah on it. No, says Reb Yehuda, you never put a Korah on it for the second level. You put select stones and you put avanim on it. Okay, that will be level two of the third group. So that's 3, 2C. And then chazar v'tachan v'ta'an, just like you did before. Now you grind them up. Now you put them under the Korah, which is very heavy. And whatever comes out of there is shlishi. And surprisingly, here too, level one, because of its processing, is kosher for the menorah, because it is called, as we'll see, the katit and zach, as we're going to go through the psukim. So harishon lemenorah, v'yashar lemenochot. By the way, says the Gemara, the lashon that you said was megargero barosh hazay. Did you mean actually megargero? Or did you mean megalgelo? If you mean megargelo, it means you actually select a gargir, which implies that you can't even just pick it off at the top. You're going to have to select, look around and see which one you could pick. Or is it megalgelo? To be megalgel with something means to just select and wait till it ripens. Is that what you meant? Or you meant that actually, you wait and until its mama is filled with oil. Tashma, it means, in fact, megalgelo, because it says in the Mishnah, in the Braita, the Tanya, Shemen Zayit, somebody, this is talking about Nidor. So it says over there, if someone is neider to bring Shemen Zayit, so it should be directly Mizeto. It should be Shemen Zayit that is coming from it out of its olive without needing to do anything with it that requires grinding and heavy pressing. So that's what is meant when someone gives to the Beis HaMikdash. Mikan Amru, somebody is looking for the highest quality for the Beis HaMikdash. Zayit Rishon Begalgelo, and here's his beferish, Begalgelo Berosh HaZayit, you let it sit there after you find the part that is going to become completely saturated with olive oil, and you wait till it's ready. And then konsola beit abad, then you bring it into the beit abad, but you don't do anything with it yet. But you've got, of course, all of your professional tools and your laser detectors, the quality of the olive, everything that you got inside of your beit abad. It doesn't mean you do anything to it yet. And you put it, and ultimately you're going to do everything to it. You're going to be tochno berechaim. You're going to be putting it into the Salim. So this is the first stage that we talked about before, but this is only with Rechaim. And we said at the beginning that you use your hand, Rechaim. Noto b'salim, za yarishon, then etan b'korah. Afterwards, that's the sheni, shemen ha-yotze mimenu is the sheni. And then, chazar v'parak, tachan v'ta'an. Then you take the olives out from where you were pressing them, put them back to grind them completely with real millstone. And then you go ahead and press them again with the korah. Ze ha-yashlishi, harishon. We'll see at the end that Reb Yehuda is going to give his commentary, of course. Harishon menorah, and the rest, hashar l'melachot. You do the same thing to the second group, v'chein zayit hasheni. And when it comes to the shlishi, there, you can't just bring it to the Beit Abad, you have to put it into the Me'aten. Ot no be'Beit Abad, hachi yilakeh, you put it up on the rooftop, as we said, because you have to get rid of all of the mulchal, which was sharp and bitter. And so you bring it back up to the drop, to the roof, until it dries off. How do you do that? Well, Oseoto kamin tamara, you make it into like a date-shaped pile, so that it's wide at the bottom and gets, you know, comes up to like a date top on top until all of the muchal is yotze, achi azuva mimav. Then you bring it back to the Beit Abad. Ultimately, you have to grind it with the rechaim, put it into the baskets, and then once again, the first to come out of it, even though this is level 3 and it needed to be left like that to be heated, it's still kosher as Rishon. Then you put it under the Korah, and that makes it Sheni. Shemen Yotze Mimenu Zaya Sheni. Then you take it out again, and you give it a real grinding in the millstones, and then you put it back under the Beit Abad, Zaya Shlishi, and the Rishon is kosher Lemineira, and the rest is kosher for Menachas, and of course, Reb Yehuda is not going to be sitting still for this and let you get away with doing it that way. Reb Yehuda, Omer, no. You did not put it into millstones at all. You would pound it, kocho, in a mortar, a hand mortar. You would not grind it. And you would not use a korah, for heaven's sakes. You would use avanim. How many times do I have to tell you guys this? And lo haya not nobis alim, you don't put it in the basket. You press it around the edges of the basket, el ha'letoch sivivot ha'sal, on all three levels, which essentially is consistent with Reb Yehuda in the Mishnah. But the problem over here is that the Mishnah, it seems to contradict itself, because look, the Tanakhama and the Mishnah said that you're kotesh. Now, it's Reb Yehuda all along that says that you're kotesh. Kotesh means you use a mortar on it and you don't grind it, right? Now, who's the sheet that we just saw in the Braita that says you use a mortar on it? That's Reb Yehuda. There are three things that Reb Yehuda insisted on, right? Don't use a millstone on it, use a mortar. Don't put it at the bottom of a basket, put it on the side, and don't use a heavy korah on it. Okay, those were the three issues that Reb Yehuda was chalek on the Tanakhama. But in our Mishnah, the Tanakhama says the word kotesh. And that's going on like Reb Yehuda. And then he goes right ahead and says, and you put it into the sal. And then Reb Yehuda has to shout, no, don't put it into the sal. So that is going against Reb Yehuda. So first we go with Reb Yehuda, and then you say tocha sal. And that's going according to the Rabbanan. So which Shita is this, actually? No, this is a different Tana of our Mishnah, who holds like Reb Yehuda in one issue, that we never grind at the beginning. We just put it into a mortar and pound it. But he argues with him, Benogea, the question of whether you can put it into the Sal or not. Now that we know we've got these 9 types of graded oils, which ones are kosher for which? Well, Harishon Shabarishon, look, I mean, Alpha A, I mean, that's like absolutely, Ein Lamala Haneno, there ain't nothing better. And that's the super best oil. Hasheni Shabarishon, Vaharishon Shabarishon, Shavim. Now, in terms of the quality of the oil itself, the second level of the Section A and the first level of Section B are the same quality oil, and there's no advantage using one or the other for a mincha. But You're still not going to be able to use a level two, even if it's of the same quality. You can't, or even if it's better quality, you cannot use a second grade of any of these for the menorah. And that's because of how we're going to understand the demands for the processing that the pusuk makes. So even though they're the same, they're only same in terms of the menorah, in terms of the menachas. So the shlishi shebarishon and the sheni of the sheni and the rishon shebishlishi actually end up being the same quality. If you want to be careful about what you're bringing for your carbon mincha, these are all the same. And the shlishi shebishlishi is the lowest level of the, obviously, if it's grade 9 oil. But you would have thought, wouldn't you, that af kol ha-minachot ha-yubadin shi-ta'anu shemen zayit zach. You'd think that, look, if the menorah needs shemen zayit zach, so then the menachos should definitely require the level 1. Because, I mean, they're for eating. You would think to yourself, if the menorah is just there for lighting, and that's ina la'achila. Nonetheless, you're looking for the highest quality pure oil. You think for sure that something that's being eaten is even a kal v'chomer. Minachot she'in la'achila inodin she'yita'anu shemen zayit zach. Shouldn't they need a highest quality? That's why the pasuk specifically says shemen zayit zach katit la'ma'or. It needs to be specifically, this darga of katit is only for the ma'or, which allows it to be pure without any kind of crushed fruit in it. But you do not need zach katit for minachot. There you can even grind it and press it under heavy kind of things, and that's not good for the ma'or, but it is good for the menorah. Now, when you say there's shavin, how could that be shavin if you say that you can only bring the Rishon Lemenorah and the Shai Lemenachot? So that means that they're not shavin. I don't get it. So in what sense are they shavin? Omer Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak, they're shavin in terms of the quality of the oil for the menachas. They don't actually all qualify for the type of oil in terms of katit. And that they are all kosher and they're all the same level of chashivas for the mincha. That's all we're saying. Here we're talking about the quality of the oil, and there we're talking about the way in which the oil is processed. It's two different dinim. Now, you would have thought, says the Mishnah, that kol ha-menachot hayu badin, I mean, they should need the same beautiful, pure olive oil if you're going to be eating them, aren't they? So the Braita goes into the psukim a little bit more so we can understand what the Mishnah is saying. Tana Rabbanan, when the Torah says zach, it says zach specifically shemen zayit zach katit lamaor. So zach, what does the word zach mean? It means pure. Pure in terms of the oil is naki. It doesn't have anything in it at all. You didn't press out under pressure and you allowed it to be filtered in such a way that it just, all you did was break it open enough to let the oil out, and even that, you strained it through the basket or through the side of the basket. That means it's completely clean. Rabbi Yehuda Eimer, well, it also needs to be katit. Now, katit means that it was not ground. That's the whole point. And that's why I keep telling you, it has to be katush. It has to be pressed to release its oil in a mortar, not in any kind of grinding process. And that's the whole meaning of katit, as far as I understand it. So you can't grind them. And that's why I keep arguing on, this is not a small issue. And indeed, the Tanna Kamma agreed with this, because the Tanna Kamma says, you're kototo at the top of the zayit, and you don't do any kind of grinding. And we said, in this, even the Tanna Kamma agrees with Rabbi Yehuda in our mission. Now, you might think that Yochel Yehe, Zach Katit, so you might think that if it wasn't Zach and Katit, and instead it was Katush, in the way that it was ground, that would be possible for Menachos, but I mean, there's a little bit of a problem in the girsa. And Rashi, the Shita, also has this girsa. Yochu yehei katush ze posul menachas. So you might have thought that the Torah wanted you to be miyached this type of oil only for the menorah. And if it's of this quality, it should not be used for menachas. Talmud lomar, no, because we see clearly that the Torah actually talks about the regular mincha of the chavite, and it says, Yisaron solet balul b'shemen katit. So obviously, shemen katit is not a psul for the menachas. So im kein, mata b'dlomar, lama or. So why did the Torah like stress so much lama or? That's to tell me, don't overspend on the menachas. You, mipnei achisachon. Remember, we understood what's the meaning of chisachon. My chisachon, Omar Rabbi Elazar, HaTorah chasa, amamonim shel Yisrael. Menachas could be brought by the thousands of gallons of oil every day. But the shemen for the menorah was only those seven small containers, which was only needed to be enough for the leilot, the long leilot. And therefore, even so, it's not going to cost very much. And because of that, there the Torah said, you should bring absolutely the highest, purest quality. But I want to make it clear, I don't expect that type of quality from regular menachas. It's not kedai to waste your money like that. Tzavet b'nei Yisrael. So we're talking about this pasuk. Tzavet b'nei Yisrael v'yikhu elecha Hashem en zayin tzach. What does it say elecha for? Omer Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmini, elecha means, don't think I need your oil. You guys find the oil for yourselves. This is all for your purposes. Elecha, lo li, lo la'orani tzarek. I want to make it very clear. The oil and the light inside of the Beis HaMikdash is for you. It's not for me. And that's, we also find that the Shulchan was all the way to the north, and the Menorah was all the way to the south. Now, in your living room, in your dining room, rather, you've got light by the table, so you can see what you're eating. You don't put your light on one side of the room, and you put your food on the other side of the room. So why over here was the menorah on one side, the far south, and the shulchan is on the far north? That's another point. Amar Rabbi Zrika, Amar Rabbi Elazar. Lo la'achila nitzarich, v'lo la'ora nitzarich. All of this food and all of this light is not for me. All of this is to be mevorech you and to be magdil you in the light of the umayyads. Same thing is true in the Beis HaMikdash. Where over there it says, Vayaz l'bayit chavunei shekufim atumim. So was it shakuf or was it atum? Well, we learn shekufim. They were indeed shekufim on the outside, should be the correct girsa, but they were atumim bibifnim. Because the light was coming from inside of the Beis HaMikdash out. So over there, you needed to allow the light out. But you didn't need to have light coming in from the outside in. And so because of that, they were made in a strange way in which it looked like the windows were opening towards the outside as they get wider and wider, like in the Rova where you have the thick stone walls. So you always allow them to sort of open up towards the inside. Over here was the other way around. This is again a remez. Lo la ora nitzarei. I don't need the light. You need my light. Okay. So we had the lashon of the pasuk, which said elecha. Then it also the next pasuk says, where exactly do you put that? Michutz laparochet ha'edut ba'ol moed yarochu to'aron erev ha'boker and so on and so forth. So why would you put it Michutz leparochet and call it here the edut? In which sense is it the edut? Because we're using the menorah as an edut. L'chol ba'ei olam shashchina shora b'Yisrael. The fact that the house is lit up is an indication that the Shechina is shora there. And in case you might think that, well, we need it for the light. Look here. Halo kol arba'im shana sholchu Yisrael ba'midbar lo'ochu el olaro. The entire time that we were in the Midbar, who was providing the light? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was providing the light with the Hanan and the Amud HaEsh. And that was by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's light. It's a little bit stupid to think that it's being put there so that we can see where to go is a street light. The point of it is so that it should be noted. Okay, but I mean, it's only a man-made light. How do we know that it's coming directly from the Shekhinah? So the western light, it's the question, what's the west? The one which was in the middle, this is a machlokas. Remember which direction the menorah runs. So if the menorah actually runs with all of the Neirot being along the Ma'arav, as opposed to being north and south, if it's the north and south, fine. So then I understand there's a Ner Ma'aravi. But if they're all Ma'arav, then it means that the middle lamp was facing the direction in which the lip that held the actual wick in it was towards the lamp, and the west, and the other wicks were facing that one. And whichever it is, you would put in the same amount of oil in the Ner Ma'aravi, exactly the same, Keneged Chavroteha, or Kemidat Chavroteha, and Mimena Hayamadlik, whom Ba Hayamisayim. So you would, during the days of Shimon HaTzadik and those, the Kohanim Gedolim that were on a Madriga, that light would continue to burn throughout the entire night. You'd have to use it to light the other candles in the morning or to fix the other candles in the morning, the Rambam holds light, and you would be matik from it, and it was the last thing for the next night that you would have to put it out and then rekindle it. So how could that be that it was burning so long? This, of course, is the equivalent of the element of the menorah of Hanukkah. And this was exactly the inyan of the Ashras HaShekhinah for the Elecha of Aaron HaKohen. This was the Behalot HaTamirot, as Ramban explains. This was the special zechus was given to Aaron that the Shekhinah would be Sherab Yisrael, even at times when the Beis HaMikdash was Choruv. And that became the Nes of Hanukkah, the Deres. Wow. Okay, beautiful. So that's it. We'll start Daf Pevav. Pezayin Bezrat Hashem with the Mishnah on the bottom of Pevav. Now the question is, when will we do this? So we have a little bit of a problem because, the big problem, it's not a little problem, that Eliyahu Navi doesn't come on an Erev Yontif, which means during Chol HaMoed Gufa, we're going to have to leave these chokers in Joppa. And if that's the case, well, I don't know what we can do for them, but they're going to end up still suffering from a Yontif Sheni. However, there is a possibility that after Yontif Rishon is complete with a new binyan, that then will be mevatel the takon of Yontif Sheni anyway, in which case there won't be any problem of bringing them over, in which case we'd be able to have our regular...
Book your flight now, gentlemen. Book your flights.
So in any event, just in case these poor guys have to end up sticking it out. So I suggest that what we do is this. We cannot give up completely on learning on the second day. I don't think that would be right for our locals, because it's at least possible to attend on the Mitzvah Yontif of your second day Yontif. Now, the Shaila is whether a woman with a frying pan is considered to be actual Sakonis Nefoshes, in which case there'd be no way to listen to the daf, or there's some shitas that hold that you can use your kids as actual guards. And you hold the child in your hand, in both hands. You've got to have a couple of kids ready for this while you're listening to the daf on Mitzvah Yontif. And that way, they leave you alone, at least until after the daf. So since it's at least possible to hear the daf, and we do have people that have really cute kids that are used to listening to the daf, so there should be no problem in their being able to hear the daf on Mitzvah Yontif. Make sure the kids get a good nap, though, during the day, just like they did on the day of the Seder. So we'll meet you Bezrat Hashem. Now, I understand it should be a little bit later, I think. Or should we still go for 9 on Mitzvah Yontif Sheni? Or should we go earlier so that the women won't realize that you're doing Daf Yomi?
I think 9 is fine, really.
You think nine is fine?
If it's not a tearful for everyone else.
No, this is the second day for them. They've already been on vacation for the day. You know, they've been having a great time. They got no problem.
So, Yisruchag.
This is Mitzray Yisruchag. Mitzray Yisruchag, Joe Berg can attend.
Right, I was just saying, we've been having a great time on Yisruchag. Yisruchag gets ignored.
That's so what we said. Why do we need, gosh, telling you. We weren't even talking about your neighborhood. You already have what to say. Telling you.
He's Barnea explaining it to us, Rabbi.
I don't know. Is it possible Barnea's getting old? And he's just getting, like, you know, repeating things? I don't, couldn't be, could it? I mean, Barnea's don't get old, do they? I don't think so. Okay. Very good, gentlemen. So, if we're Bezrat Hashem looking forward to Kriyat Yam Suf and Kriyat all types of other Yamim, then Bezrat Hashem, what a wonderful time that would be for preparing ourselves to say Shira and Shirat Hayam and Hallel and all kinds of wonderful things that will come together with the Nisim and the Flaws. Nisei Hayam. So looking forward to seeing you on Mitzoy Yisruchag for us and Mitzoy Yontev for Joker.
Rabbi, we're going to fall a block behind. Is that the plan?
Yeah. Listen, we did pretty good, I think. Come on.
I mean,
give us a little credit, you know. Baruch Hashem, we were Zeicha. We did good.
We could learn, I mean, twice maybe on Yisruchag, no? In the morning and then at night and not fall behind.
But then you're leaving behind Joburg.
But, I mean, they catch up.
Every time we have to go through the same business.
But other times we usually learn. We let them catch up.
And we've done well, thank God. Look at that. Barnea now has Dumbledore in the house. Look at that.
David, but that's an incentive for them to Lishana Habaha Baruch Olayim. So then they'll be able to listen.
I know, but since there's no way to get here in time, it's...
Listen, we can put them on top of a rocket and shoot them over. They can make it here.
All right. How about you guys conduct this conversation between yourselves and leave me out of it. Anyway, wishing you a wonderful Moadim with Simcha, really, Bezrat Hashem, we should be Zecha, Ki Meitzeis Chemeretz, Mitzrayim, Ar'enu Niflaot, and we should be Zecha, but all of this Hachana is for a Geula, not to have to wait for further Moadim, Regolim, Aboim, Lekrasenu, Leshalom, but that we should be Zecha without further torture in being able to see Shivas, Am Yisrael, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Gilui, Shrinasai, Ve'enei kol choy, ve'yos lachem le'elohim. Kol tov, everyone, and wonderful Pesach Sameach.